lights.
Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. This is not the X-Files. We are not scientists. We are not mathematicians. We are certainly not school teachers. We are no experts. We are paranormal investigators who have come together to give our audience insight and educational subjects about the paranormal field. Join us live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Without further delay, here are your hosts, Matthew J. Haas, and his partner in crime, Tim Vickers.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Paranormal Talk Radio. Boy, it is good to be back live. I know we've been on hiatus for about a week or so. I have my partner in crime here with me, as always, Tim Vickers. How are you doing?
Doing great, sir. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. And as always, thanks for filling in for me prior to that week.
No problem.
Yeah, and we had some difficulties last time that we were live. But
we had horrible difficulties.
It was probably like one of the worst shows that we ever done. But
It was... demons, because, you know, we make fun of them and tell them that they don't exist. So it must have been a demon. That's the only explanation.
Yes, I totally agree.
Yes.
We'll blame demons.
Yep.
So we have a great show tonight for everybody. You know, we have a really good guest tonight for you hardcore skeptics out there. We are honored and excited to have Haley Stevens. She is a paranormal researcher who is based in Wiltshire, England, who uses scientific skepticism and rational inquiry to investigate claims of a paranormal nature. She became a paranormal researcher in her teens and was a believer before starting to work as a non-believer and skeptic in 2007. She documents her research, thoughts, and commentary on the award-winning Haley is a Ghost blog, has spoken internationally about her work, and acts as a media advisor, all while maintaining a full-time job in the UK arts industry. So I think that's pretty cool. You know, she's a hardcore skeptic, and, you know, she uses rational, you know, investigating. Tim, you've watched some of her videos, and she has some pretty good ideas, investigative ideas that me and you were talking about earlier before the show started.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this guest. I fell upon her blog just by clicking different skeptic sites, different critical thinking sites, and I ended up on her blog and just really loved how she has it laid out and what she has to say, and immediately, you know, just subscribed to her blog, and everything that comes through is just really good. I love how she approaches investigating a claim, not necessarily the ghost. You know, we talk about that a lot. You know, we hunt the claim, we don't hunt the ghost, and she's right there and pushing that way of thinking forward. And I can't stress enough how much I like that and think that's at least an appropriate way to go.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things that I liked was how she mentioned, you know, a proper investigation. I mean, you would think months into a residence, you know, and that's something we've talked about. You know, it's so much fun when you hear people say, well, I got an EMF baseline. And, well, how long did you do that? Well, we were there for, you know, 4 hours. So we did the EMF baseline for 10 minutes. And, you know, you can only imagine, you know, to get an accurate baseline, you would need, you know, it would be great to have a year with nothing but data collectors and being able to look at that. And she fell right on it. And I just enjoy it. So I really can't wait to hear, you know, how she got to that part, how she got to that point in her life and her history to that point.
Yeah. I like the fact, Tim, that you brought up, like data logging. I'm actually considering investing in data loggers myself because I really want to compare, and measure like exactly to a T, like what things we're getting from where, what sources things are coming from and whatnot. And data loggers can do that. There's many versions of different types of data loggers that you can get into. Some can get expensive, some can get non-expensive. And I think that's the way to go. I think that could be a really good way of measuring, EMF or, whatever anomalies that you're looking for when you are investigating claims, in a residence. And I think that's important to do that because you don't live there every day. You don't work there every day. And I tell my clients all the time, sometimes it takes us, several investigations to do our research because of that factor that you don't visit, that location every day. So you can't really, you don't have that comparison,
mm-hmm.
You can't compare anything really. How can you,
yeah.
It's not fair to not only your client, but, the investigation itself really. And if you have nothing to compare to, then you really can't use that as evidence, per se.
You can't even say it. You can't even really should be able to say that you have a baseline. Face it, most people are there for a couple hours, in a macro view of the investigation, 10 or 20 minutes of sweeping, I'll do the air quotes around sweeping the place where high EMF fields is minuscule. I mean, it's very minuscule. You don't know what's there. And then to claim EMF spikes and EMF hits versus evidence of a ghost is irresponsible and not good practice, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. Especially when it comes to private homes. Tim and I, we both have, expressed our heart, to our audience about that because we're waiting for that day in court,
That's good. There's the day in court's coming for somebody.
Yeah, I mean, it's already happening for other reasons, but speaking of those reasons, before we go on about that stuff, because me and Tim can talk about that kind of stuff forever.
Oh, yeah.
Because it bothers us a lot, but... we've brought back the news to our show, and Tim, you've been kind of doing the news for us. Usually Mike Diamond does the news, but Friday nights don't work out for him, and Tim's kind of taken over the helm of the news. What do you got for us this week?
Well, I saw this on Sharon Hill's Doubtful News. Thought I would share it today. Another couple were arrested for breaking and entering so they could go ghost hunting. So apparently there were, according to some criminal complaints, a 19-year-old and a 20-year-old out of Garden City, it looks like Minnesota, were in a building that was an old mental hospital. So someone had called the police, saw some strange things going on. When they got there, the two guys ran and they were apprehended pretty easily. And when they were caught, the first thing they said was, hey, we were just ghost hunting. So there you have trespassing, breaking and entering for what? A thrill. I'm not really sure. However, what I like to put forward is Sharon's kind of more remarks on this, which I thought were insightful as to people that have facilities or people that have houses or people that like or give permission to whomever comes and investigates their property, that they give permission for it to become released to the media. And she points out that, when you do that and it gets out into the media and you have people that, a team that that does what we call, you know, you hear the splash reel or the sizzle reel, and they talk about all the EVPs and the scary stuff and the voices and the kids giggling and all the stuff that people think happen. That draws attention. It draws attention to other people that can, you know, they might think, well, I'm going to weigh the chances of getting caught versus breaking into this place and seeing if I can have an experience like that.
Yeah. Does it say how old these people were that broke in?
Yes, 19 and 20-year-old.
Good God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're kids in our eyes, but
yeah.
Inexperience is what I'm going to, you know, say here, because, you know.
Well, you know, I think the thing is that they saw this. They saw this, they saw it previously in the media, because this place is an abandoned mental hospital and it's slated to be torn down. So before it was along the lines of, you know, getting everything taken out, the owners allowed a ghost hunting team to go in and do whatever they do. And when they were done, it looks like what they had on their media reel, so to speak, or what they put on their website was, you know, they had a 4 or 5 hour hunt. You know, they had unusual feelings, sounds, movements, smells, heat, energy changes, which, you know, me and the use of energy just kills me, but that's what they have, heat, energy changes, you know, because when energy moves from, it's paranormal, but energy moves all the time. Anyway, I won't go into that.
Be paranormal.
It's energy. Yeah, it's paranormal. It's energy. So they had video. They showed K2 devices, Ghost Box, which is just crazy. And so all this is on the media. All this is very locally touted. And I think what ends up happening is exactly what you see here. There were two younger people that were interested in the paranormal that thought, well, this is a hot spot. I mean, look at all this stuff that this other team got. So they risked it and they got caught.
Yep.
And yeah, so they're going to have, it looks like, breaking and entering and trespassing to go for.
And now they have a criminal record.
Mm-hmm.
And there goes their future in ghost hunting.
Yeah.
You know, I'm actually, Tim, I'm glad you brought this article up, because I'm going to be lecturing and speaking at the C2D1 30th anniversary haunting, a special event, and I'm very honored to be chosen to speak on behalf of Christopher D. Shazeri, who wrote the book Surviving Eminence. He had experience, you know, some really crazy experiences during his college years at Geneseo, New York, the SUNY college that he went to. I'm going to be speaking about the dangers of the paranormal, both spiritually and physically, you know, because there could be physical dangers involved. And, you know, when you break an entry and you have an inexperienced group of people like these two kids, you know, a lot of other things can happen to you other than being arrested. First of all, you're breaking an entry, you're going to get caught, and you are going to go to jail. The other thing is, a lot of these mental institutions that are abandoned or closed down for specific reasons, a lot of them are closed down because of, you know, very dangerous situations like asbestos. You know, they're condemned because the buildings are falling apart. You know, there's a whole list of dangers involved that they are unaware of. You know, they're just all gung-ho because they're excited. It's a really crazy place with a dark history, and like you said, it's a hot spot, so they thought they could, you know, get away with it. But, you know, by doing so, you're putting your lives in danger, you know, without the proper knowledge and research of the location itself, you know, without the proper preparation, you know, for going in there. So this is kind of the points I wanted to bring up, but, you know, I think you know, dangers of the paranormal is something that everybody should be aware of. And I can't wait to do this lecture because I think it's a very important thing to have on, you know, to be aware of.
Yeah, and, you know, because it's an abandoned mental hospital, for some reason, mental hospitals, the fact that people had mental health issues and may have passed away at this place, you know, it would be very interesting to me to find out the source and where it came from that because someone has a mental health issue, after they die, they're more than likely to haunt the facility that they passed away in, you know, even if that's true. You know, I can see, you know, you can imagine when people see haunt, you know, a mental health hospital or a mental hospital, you could probably hear the saliva glands working in some ghost hunters going, well, you know that place is haunted. Why do you know that place is haunted? Because it's a mental health hospital and it's broken down and it's closed and it's got windows busted. I mean, that's why? Why is it? What about the fact that something is a mental health facility and closed down? I wonder what the reasoning behind the probability is that it would be a higher return if someone did an investigation there, other than folklore, right? Other than because they see it on TV. But I would really be interested if somebody would be able to break down very specifically why they would think that a mental health hospital would be more haunted.
Right, right.
Yeah, I imagine, yeah, if you pass away somewhere, I would imagine it wouldn't really matter to you under what condition you were. You passed away.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know, you know, what the facts are in this particular location, but, you know, if they read somewhere or, you know, heard a rumor that, oh, there were thousands of deaths in this place, so it's got to be haunted. But that's not necessarily true.
No, you know, but I think that increases the likelihood of somebody willing to take a risk. I think that increases the probability that somebody would go, all right, that's an old insane asylum, so I'm going to risk it.
Yeah.
You know, so what? It's an old insane asylum. I mean, on what basis would they give a higher probability that ghosts would be in this place?
Yeah. I mean, you know, in all honesty, Tim, like if I were, say, just hypothetically, if I were someone who were a crazy person or I was...
hypothetically.
If I was in one of these locations and I passed away in this location and I had the chance to go to heaven or hell and I went to heaven and, you know, not that I want to bring up religion or anything like that into this conversation or to our audience, but I'm just, you know, this is an example. Like, I can't see myself wanting to come back to a horrific place where they torture patients with, you know, how do I say?
Poor care? Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. You know,
allegedly.
Yeah, that's a good word. And mm-hmm. where they practiced these different... you know, various types of medical practices that were unorthodox in these type of locations. God knows, you know, what went on in these facilities, but, you know, basically what I'm getting at is that's not a happy place I want to go back to.
Well, yeah, if you use their logic, yeah, I mean, you know, if there is any logic. And just a very interesting question that I'd often thought when I hear people, and not just, mental health hospitals, but you hear it about jails, you know, because apparently the energy was very violent and, you know, the energy word comes up and it's very negative energy. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? Negative energy, you know, very violent. Okay. but then there's the jails and people will go and risk the jails and, old jails. You know, if you want to break into an active jail, you actually don't have to break into it. You can just get into it, I'm sure. Jails, cemeteries, old cemeteries for some reason. I think it's the it's just its own culture of what people view as frightening, and probably what people view as a society that's frightening to them. And that's, a mental health hospital would be frightening to somebody because maybe they don't ever want to picture themselves in one, or a jail, maybe because they don't ever want to picture themselves in one of those, or a cemetery, because nobody wants to picture them. We're all going to see some type of resting place. But maybe those types, maybe it's because it's a cultural or a societal thing or a psychological thing, that they're more scary because even if they weren't abandoned, it's still a place that you don't want to go or you find intimidating.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of those places are dark and scary. And, if there is anything negative, in these locations, I, for one, our team always used to, joke around. We always used to be like, we've never really investigated any types of locations like that yet. But in a way, I kind of don't want to because, I don't know, I just feel like, they're not at rest if there is anything there. And I don't know if I'd want to mess with that kind of thing because they're not at rest and you never know what kind of thing you're going to get into there. And, I don't know. I just think it's a big risk going into those type of locations,
Yeah, yeah. You never hear of anybody putting anything on their website. The most haunted abandoned McDonald's. The most haunted abandoned Subway shop. It's just interesting from a psychological point as to why they would find those places more terrifying than something else. And I think it's just because they would find it more terrifying because of it's intimidating whether or not it's abandoned or not.
Yeah, definitely. No, I'm totally with you, Tim. I'm on the same page as you. I think it's just a big psychological thing because it's got the reputation of whatever historic factors are involved. And they just think automatically because of that, it's got to have something. But, what bothers me about that is this is one thing that's been bothering me as an investigator myself. A lot of teams make that, they make this major mistake and whether it's an abandoned hospital, insane asylum, a residence, no matter what you're investigating, a lot of people just go into a place thinking it's active. Or it's haunted. I've been trying so hard to go into a lot of locations personally, kind of cold. I don't go in thinking it's haunted. I want to go in and research the claims on my clients because I want to make sure there's nothing more serious going on as far as, like I said, we've brought this up many times before, but when you go into a private setting, you want to make sure there's no physical abuse, alcohol abuse. You want to make sure that any children involved are not in danger, of anything, things like that. And I don't know. You understand what I'm where I'm going with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I don't know. I just,
The problems we face of the paranormal world,
yeah.
Matt.
Yeah.
We'll solve them all someday.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah. Well, we got about 5 minutes before we call in our awesome guest that we have tonight. She's a skeptic and a hardcore skeptic, if that. Again, she's based in Wiltshire, England, so I want to thank her personally for – Tim, I think she's five hours ahead of us right now.
5 or 6 hours, yes.
Yeah, so I think it's wee hours in the morning by her. So, that's great that she can take that time out of her, wee hours in the morning to be our guest tonight. So I'm excited to have her. And, I'll read her bio a little bit here again. Bear with me as I get it here. I'm just happy that we have no technical difficulties this week.
Oh, man, don't say that.
I jinxed it. That's it.
Oh, yeah, you did.
So, right? And you hear my hungry cat in the background.
That's all right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, again, for those who are joining us late in the show, Haley Stevens is a skeptic. She's a paranormal researcher based in Wiltshire, England, who uses scientific skepticism and rational inquiry to investigate claims of a paranormal nature. She became a paranormal researcher in her teens and was a believer before starting to work as a non-believer and skeptic in 2007. She documents her research, thoughts, and commentary on the award-winning Haley is a Ghost blog, has spoken internationally about her work, and acts as a media advisor, all while maintaining a full-time job in the UK arts industry. Tim, earlier in our conversation, you said that she actually had the chance to work with Joe Nickell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, I'm a big fan of Joe Nickell as well. It might have been on that page or one of those pages I was reading from him that I got to her blog. I got to watch some of the panels she was on. One was on about cryptozoology, and watched some of that. And just a real, real smart person, very grounded, very good, great critical thinker, and puts a lot of thought into looking at claims of paranormal. And I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and actually add her on right now. So we're close enough to the time. So everybody, without further delay, I want to introduce Ms. Haley Stevens. Get her in here now. Here we go. Okay. So this is Haley. Haley, how are you? Hello, Haley? Hello?
Oh, you had to mention no technical difficulties, didn't you?
Haley, are you there? Yay. I don't know.
Try again.
Okay. Bear with me, everybody, as I'm trying to get her on.
Well, I think it's very... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just going to make sure that you're still with me. I didn't hang up on you.
Oh, no. Uh-uh. Yeah, I love that. I would like to hear what she says about in England and how wonderful that place is. Because you could imagine, the history we think we have here in the States.
Hello.
Yeah, we're just...
Oh, there she is. Hey, Haley, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. Sorry about that. I had the microphone switched off.
That's okay. Welcome to Paranormal Talk Radio. We were just, talking about your bio a little bit, letting our audience know who you are, and, we're very excited and honored to have you as our guest tonight. You know, thanks for at the last minute, to come on our show.
And to stay up so late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're 5 hours ahead of us, so I totally am honored that, you can do that, and I can imagine probably how tired you are, and thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Tim tells me a lot about your blogs, and he's watched a lot of your videos, and I'm totally like jealous that you were able to work with Joe Nickell and
Joe's a great guy. He really is.
What was that like for you to work with Joe Nickell just briefly?
It was completely unexpected. There's a conference here in the UK every year, and they had Joe along to do their closing talk. And he mentioned that whilst he's in the UK, he would really love the chance to go to Loch Ness. He's never been there. And I've always kind of dabbled in cryptozoology as well as ghost research. And so the organisers who I know were like, hey, would you like to go to Loch Ness with Joe Nickell? And I was like, yeah, of course I would love to go to Loch Ness with Joe Nickell. it was really great. We had some really good conversations actually about kind of the differences in the approaches to paranormal research. So obviously... I kind of use a more modern approach, using a lot of technology and so on. whereas Joe could probably be considered as a bit more old school. And so it was quite interesting to kind of compare the different techniques. So when we didn't just go to Loch Ness, we also investigated, we spent a few days in Windermere, and they've got a lake monster there that's quite a recent case. And so it was quite interesting for the two kind of approaches to kind of work side by side in a way, and they kind of complemented one another, which is really, really interesting.
Yeah, no, definitely. How about just kind of briefly tell the audience a little bit about yourself? How did you first get involved in the paranormal? What got you interested? Have you had any experiences? And kind of maybe get into how at first you were a believer and what turned you into a more skeptic kind of approach to investigation.
Sure, yeah. It's a long story, so I'll kind of give it an overview rather than boring you for the next hour. But I've always been interested in ghosts and so on, and just kind of the paranormal in nature. So I live in Wiltshire in the southwest of England, and it's often referred to as Weird Wiltshire because there's so much folklore, ghost folklore, fairy folklore, religious folklore. So there's lots of stories about the devil locally. And when you grow up here, it's kind of difficult to ignore that. And so I've always had an interest. And my mum has also always had an interest. And when I got older, obviously got the internet at home, and then started watching television shows like Most Haunted and Ghost Adventures and things like that. And I was really intrigued, but obviously I didn't really trust what I was seeing on the television. So I created a ghost hunting team, and that was in 2005. And then in about 2007, after a couple of years of doing what we were doing, I realized we were kind of barking at the wrong tree and probably making lots of leaps of logic and assumptions, false assumptions. And I just kind of changed the way that I approached the research. I now approach it in a much more skeptical fashion.
That's great. And, you know, I can relate to you in a way because I was kind of like that at first myself. I was a big believer in everything, you know, every photograph I ever got, you know, every piece of audio I ever got, any piece of video I ever got. And, you know, after just kind of learning from more experienced researchers who had a better grasp for, like, photography, who had a better grasp for scientific method, I just kind of use a more critical thinking and rational approach myself. Tim has that background too, and we kind of appreciate that approach a lot because we're both similar in that fashion. So
I have the exact same. Just it's kind of interesting. Most people we meet along this type of where we're at have that kind of transition. And you know, when I first started, you know, if I caught an orb, you know, I got a ghost. I was like, yes. And, you know, any shadow that moved was a ghost. And anything that ever did anything that I couldn't explain was a ghost. And then just like you and Matt, at some point, you know, after several years, I started thinking about it. And I was like, well, you know, we keep doing the same thing and we keep getting the same thing and nothing ever changes. So
exactly.
We must be doing something wrong.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that some people who do the whole ghost hunting thing will have that kind of revelation and have that moment where everything kind of becomes, it's like a moment of clarity. But then there are other people who have been doing it just as long who carry on making the leaps of logic and carry on making the assumptions and using the pseudoscience. And I think it's all to do with having an open mind. And lots of people talk about being open-minded to the paranormal, but actually I think unless you are willing to be critical of yourself, you're actually not very open-minded at all, and that's what you kind of see is those people who do have the open mind tend to become a lot more rational, and those people who don't have the open mind who think they have tend to carry on doing the same old thing time after time.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, if you claim that you have an open mind, you should have an open mind. An open mind towards everything else, you know, not just ghosts, everything ghosts, but, you know, you should have an open mind towards, you know, other, skepticism as well.
And yeah, you have to be willing to have an open mind to say, well, maybe I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy to point at somebody and say, well, you're wrong. But it's really difficult to, like, look at yourself and go, well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I've been wrong for the past 4 years. And that's, you know, that's, I think that's really what open-mindedness is.
Yeah, and I think one of the mistakes that I think people make is assuming that skeptics are closed-minded. And actually, skepticism does require an open mind. If you call yourself a skeptic but you don't have an open mind, then actually you're not a skeptic. So when people hear that you're a skeptic or you call yourself a skeptic, people often associate that with being closed-minded. But actually, if you think about the whole concept of a ghost hunt and what happens, most people who believe in the paranormal and go looking for the paranormal things, so they go looking specifically for ghosts because they've already made their mind up, they'll do the same techniques. They won't adjust what they're doing based on their case. They don't kind of make it a unique investigation. It's the same old thing, and they're looking for the same old answers. Whereas somebody who, you know, is a bit more rational, maybe somebody who calls themselves a skeptic, will actually sit back and think about things in a lot more detail. So there are often these accusations of being quite closed-minded because you're a non-believer, or being closed-minded because you're a skeptic. But actually, I think that comes with an open mind, automatically comes with an open mind, because someone who's a skeptic is willing to believe if the evidence is provided.
Oh, yeah. We have another person that I think will just enjoy listening to this, Kenny Biddle. And, you know, we say a lot of times on our show when he's a guest, you know, we would love, I mean, I'm just going to be honest, I would love for someone to say, you know, and have some valid, researched, duplicated evidence that there's a ghost. I mean, that would be a phenomenal find. But until you have something that really supports it, then you don't have anything. And I'm a skeptic, not because I don't believe it. I'm a skeptic because I really want somebody to show me something that has some value to it, that can be measured and tested and retested and looked at and scrutinized and pass all of that.
Yeah, exactly. I think as a methodology, an approach to questioning claims, skepticism, it just sets a really good bar for what you accept and the way in which you handle claims. But I think even kind of looking for the piece of evidence that would convince you, I think it's almost kind of getting ahead of ourselves in a way, because to do that, firstly, you have to know what a ghost or spirit is, and there is no agreed upon definition. So until people can agree upon a definition for what a ghost is, you're never going to get that piece of information that convinces you, because for some people, orbs are proof that ghosts are real. For other people, they're not. For some people, electronic voice phenomena is proof that ghosts are real. For other people, they're not. Some people accept cold spots. Some people accept the testimony of a medium or a psychic. But there is no checklist that you can tick off. So when somebody says, this is a piece of evidence, you can't get this list and go, yeah, it's got all of these characteristics, therefore it must be a ghost. So that's never going to happen until there's this definition. And I don't think there ever will be a definition of what a ghost is. I think the progress is made in understanding why people have strange experiences rather than looking for the supernatural answers. I think when people have strange experiences, even if you can't find an explanation, it doesn't mean there isn't an explanation. It just means that you can't find it. And I think people just kind of get ahead of themselves a little bit.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. And I'm glad you kind of went that way with it, the way you said that, because I think a lot of people make that mistake, that common mistake, and because they can't find an explanation, automatically they think it's something paranormal, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's paranormal. There could be an actual natural explanation for something, but we just, you know, it's beyond our reach, you know, for that time being. You know, we may not have the exact equipment to analyze things, or, you know, we may not have the proper knowledge to review what we're investigating at that moment. But not everything is paranormal. There could very well be a, a natural thing going on that we just, you know, are unaware of?
I would probably go as far as to say that nothing is paranormal. I think you have things that are explained and things that are not explained. But mm-hmm. just because they're not explained doesn't mean there isn't an explanation. And to say something is paranormal suggests that we've been able to rule out every possible cause. And I don't really know of any phenomena that has ever had that issue where every possible cause has been accounted for. So, yeah, I probably put my neck on the line there and say that I don't think anything is paranormal in nature.
Right. Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah, me too.
Absolutely. I would, I often say when I look at when people talk about evidence of paranormal and when I get questioned or if I get a little heat because, you know, I take the same stance as you, I try to turn it around as an example. And I say, well, you know, if everything is paranormal, then nothing's paranormal. And, you know, until you understand that something that's not is unexplained and you can't explain it, doesn't bridge that leap of logic to say something's paranormal or say something's a ghost or a demon or a spirit. I get that.
Yeah. And I think what happened with me back when I first started doing the whole ghost research thing is you don't realize you're making those leaps of logic until somebody points it out to you. And that's the same with all the biases that we experience when we do this kind of research. Is you don't realize that you're kind of making a leap of logic or that you're experiencing confirmation bias until someone says you do realize that that's what's causing you to have these experiences. It's not because they're significant, it's because you're making them significant. And I think for me that really blew my mind around 2007 when I started to discover the way in which our brains trick us, and I learned a lot about that around that time, and yeah, that was completely mind blowing for me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our website's getting moved from a server right now, so our website's not in good shape. But on my website, I have a full page full of illusions. And I love it. You know, Dr. Tyson, I was watching a lecture of his, and he was just, you know, he talked about, you know, for such a great, wonderful, awesome machine that our brain is, it is so easily fooled. And he pointed out, he said, you could have a pencil and a piece of paper and draw something and fool our brain, and they'll even tell you they're going to fool your brain, and your brain will still be fooled. I think, you know, along the same lines, when I started understanding illusions and how biofeedback and how we interpret different things and stimulus, that was a big step for me at that moment, in understanding that what we get from sensory input and how we retain it and how we try to recall it when we tell a story about something, all that can be completely discombobulated, you know, even as it's coming in, it can be misinterpreted. And not only can it be misinterpreted, but the ease at which it can is phenomenal. I mean, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
And ever since then, I love auditory and visual illusions, and I love keeping that up.
Yeah, I am always trying and include a few auditory illusions in my talks when I speak to the public about paranormal research, because it never fails to amaze people. They, you know, I'll play them either an EVP recording, or there's one where somebody is saying a sentence and it has been distorted, and so you can't make out what's being said. So I'll play that to them, and then when you tell them what they should be hearing, you play it back to them, and you just see their faces, their jaws just drop, because suddenly they realize just how much we rely on prior information to make sense of what we're experiencing at that moment. I'm the same. I find it incredible. And I think the only way that you can try and not fall for that happening to you, I mean, you can't really. It's part of being human. That's how we're wired in our heads. But, you know, the only way to try and ensure that you don't make those logical mistakes is to practice rational inquiry and skepticism.
How is it for you guys? I know like the paranormal is kind of similar all over the world. In England, how do I want to approach this question is, how do you feel the field is changing for you guys overseas where you are? Do you think it's gone in a more more better serious direction? Do you think people are starting to use like more critical thinking and, you know, in order to kind of like try to prove there's something paranormal or, you know, with a better approach to it? How are your feelings about like the current state of the field in your area?
I don't really feel as though I understand what you mean when you say the field, you know, people who go out and do the ghost research, but I don't feel as though there really is a common cause. So I think everybody's in it for themselves.
Right.
I mean, people often talk about paranormal unity and because we're all in this together and we're looking for the same thing. And I think that's complete bollocks. I'm sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. And we're not all in this for the same thing. People, and this is in a way, I mean, when I first got involved in paranormal research as a skeptic, I was more interested in kind of looking for the rational reasons people were having strange experiences. I'm still interested in that, but now I'm quite fascinated about why people believe in the paranormal and why people get involved in paranormal research and what it means to them as like a human experience. And I think people who get involved in paranormal research do it for selfish reasons. And that's not a bad thing. I think, you know, we've all had, grief in our life, or we're all curious about, you know, our mortality and life and death. And people get involved because they're curious. And we're not necessarily always doing paranormal research to help other people. Sometimes it's to help ourselves. And that can be the reason that you continue to confirm your own biases, because you need to do that. And so although I feel that there has been some progress in that things are becoming a lot more rational, because now the rational information is really easy to get hold of, like online. You can talk to people all over the world online and they can peer review your stuff and say, actually, did you know that maybe it's just a trick of the mind? Or at the same time, though, as these progresses are being made, it's also just as easy to access the misinformation online.
Yeah.
And I think every time it looks as though people are becoming more rational as a collective, I think you always end up taking one step forward and two steps back, because misinformation sells. It's really attractive. For some people, it's comforting. I mean, there has been research done in the past that showed for those who've lost a spouse, a husband or wife, the belief that the spirit of their dead husband or wife is with them can actually be part of the grieving process and can actually help, can be healthy as part of the grieving process. And, yeah, I mean, you look at the way the media report the paranormal, it just fills column inches. And it's really good television. It gets the ratings in. And so for every step forward, there are always going to be two steps backwards. But I don't think that we should get too hung up on that. I mean, it's great to try and change the world and to try and make everybody rational, but people are only going to come around to that way of thinking by themselves. It has to be a personal discovery. I know that from experience, I know that people can tell you that you're wrong until they're blue in the face, but unless you're willing to understand that yourself, it's not going to make a difference.
Yeah.
So I think it's about looking after like your own research and kind of trying to lead by example.
Yeah.
So what I do on my website, I try and make the information available so that if anybody is curious, it's there for them and they can discover it and then move on from there if they want to.
Cool. I love how you put that. And me and Tim kind of talked about that a little bit earlier in the show before you came on. I was telling Tim that a lot of common mistake is researchers and investigators, when they go into a place, you know, their belief should be kind of left at the door. and they should go in to where whatever they're investigating and investigate the claims rather than going into every place thinking it has activity or a target, because you're just already tainting, you know, the investigation in a way, because you're biased to it, like you mentioned
you've
before.
Biased.
Yeah, and you know, I think, you know, like that's the thing, like that's what I'm hung up on as far as me personally, like this whole psychology and belief system that's going on out there in the field. I think if people can separate that when they go into an investigation, then we can really make progress, you know?
True, it's true. But at the same time, I think, and I think I feel exactly the same way, but then I look back at how I used to do the ghost hunting in the first couple of years, and I did that. I used to go into the buildings in the dark with the lights turned off, night vision camcorders, asking the same, you know, the typical questions, is there anybody there, give them a sign. And at the time, I had no idea that I was bringing my own biases into the investigation, because I just was completely unaware of it. So it is problematic, because it's completely biased research. You can't form a decent conclusion if you've got a biased methodology right from the off. But actually, the people who do that probably don't, either they don't realise they're doing it, or they don't care that they're doing it, and they're not going to change. And for a long time, I got really cross about that, and it's like, that you realise that you're doing more damage than good. But then one day, I just had this kind of revelation, and I realised that I wasn't going to stop people from doing that. They had to be the ones to stop themselves from doing that. And it's a big thing to ask people to do. I mean, I look back to when I realised that I no longer believe that ghosts were real. There were people that, it was almost like mourning for people twice, because you always thought that you're going to see them after you died.
Yeah.
And then you realize you're not. It's a huge thing to have to come to terms with for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So it is annoying, but at the same time, it's one of those things that you can't really have too much influence over.
Yeah.
You can just be there, you can, you know, give your point of view and say, I don't agree, and this is why I don't agree.
Yep.
But people have to, they have to decide to listen. And I think that's one of the problems with the whole skeptic movement, is because a lot of people get really angry about this stuff. And I see it all the time. So I speak for a lot of skeptic conferences, and I've got quite a large following on my blog of people who don't believe in this stuff. And they just get so frustrated that people believe this stuff, you know, don't they realise ghosts don't exist, why don't they just move on? It's like, actually, it's a lot more complicated than that. People are human, and to be human is to be flawed, and that, you just have to roll with that and understand that.
Yeah. I like what you said before, again, about, you know, how you can't change people and the way they can change, you know, their views and perspective, you know, which I totally agree with. And I don't know, this could be like a silly analogy in a way, but it's like, for example, you know, all your life you've been brought up and raised that the belief in Santa Claus, and, you know, when you get older and then you find out, you know, Santa Claus isn't really a real person, but...
I think there are definitely some, there is some crossover. I remember when I found out that Santa wasn't real, I was less upset about Santa than I was about the Easter Bunny, because when I found out that the Easter Bunny wasn't real, I no longer got Easter eggs. But when I knew Santa wasn't real, I still got Christmas presents, so I wasn't too hung up on that. But I think the thing that is really important to remember, and this is something that I always try to remember, is that sometimes trying to convince somebody that they're wrong about ghosts being real can actually be more harmful than them continuing to believe that ghosts are real. And I think people try and change people's minds because they're concerned for them, and they don't want to want them to get harmed, you know, maybe like by fraudulent psychics or con men or something like that. But for some people, believing in ghosts, it's helping them. It's, you know, if they've lost somebody, it's part of the grieving process, and it will be a huge part of their life. And so sometimes, I think most of the time, if somebody believes in ghosts, you might think it's really stupid. If they believe in EVP, you might think that's the most ridiculous thing. but you just have to leave it, because actually by kind of trying to get them to turn their back on it, they might not be ready to do that, and you can end up harming them. And so you kind of have to consider the ethics of everything you're doing. And actually, once you start thinking about the ethics of ghost research, it's never ending. It's like this huge minefield, and every step you take, you're probably going to set a mine off.
Yeah. Now, I'm probably going to get like hundreds of hate mail about Santa Claus statement. I'm probably going to get lots of people. What do you mean Santa Claus isn't real?
I didn't even think about that, Matt.
What if some kids are listening,
well,
man?
I was like, whoops.
There is a real Santa historically. St. Nicholas was a real person, and who's to say that he doesn't still exist somehow?
Me and Tim.
Absolutely.
Me and Tim talk about this a lot when it comes to skepticism. I always like to say that it's got a bad reputation, because I think a lot of believers in the paranormal tend to think of it as a negative light, because they're always like saying, well, who is this person to question or peer review, you know, my work and my ethics is in an investigation. And, you know, they're like, you know, who are they to give me an opinion about this or that? And that's how a lot of arguments and fights break out between
skeptics and
believers. And then, you know, all hell breaks loose, and, you know, we all know how that goes.
It does, yeah. And, yeah, I think it's important that if you're going to criticize or debunk something, that you should always focus on the claims rather than the person. It can be really tempting to kind of cross over into the area where you start insulting people or questioning their character. I mean, sometimes it's justified, because there are bad people out there who deserve to be criticized. But I think that you have to focus on the claims and the arguments being made. But at the same time, I think if you're making claims that are paranormal in nature, if you're making any claims and you're making them sound like evidence-based claims, then you have to expect that people are going to question that. And you can't make claims and not be questioned about it. And if you are making claims that, you know, this is paranormal or this is proof that ghosts are real, then you should have the evidence to back that up. You can't make claims without the data to back it up. The burden of proof does lay with the person making the claim at the end of the day. And I think if people get insulted by that, then perhaps they need to just think why they're being finding that insulting.
Yeah.
You know, it's just part of the process. Any decent researcher is happy to have their conclusion questioned. I mean, I'm certainly on my blog, if, you know, if I reach a conclusion about something and I'm wrong and somebody else shows how it was done or the correct answer, then I'll be the first person to hold my hands up and go, oh, look, I got this wrong and these people got it right. And I think that's part of being open-minded, is that as new information comes along, you change your mind about something if that information is good information, if it's good data.
Yeah, I mean, how can you be against questioning things? I mean, in a way, it's only a positive thing. And, exactly. If you're going to put something, an extraordinary claim out there, you need to be able to support it and say, well, I did this, I did A, B, C, and D to get this, and, you know, why wouldn't, like, I always say to Tim on our show lots of times, I say, like, if I got something that I thought was evidence and I wanted to share it with the public, I would want to collaborate that with more than 100 people that, you know, I welcome peer review, because I want to prove it more that it could be something, because what if we really did have something and, you know, nobody can dispute it, or you know, it would be irrefutable then. Like, why wouldn't you want to welcome that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's also important to kind of open yourself up to peer review and criticism, because what if you're wrong? If you don't go public, or you don't listen to people, you sit there with your fingers in your ears, you're never going to know that you're wrong.
Yep.
I think sometimes people confuse skeptics and cynics too.
Yeah, completely.
Some skeptics don't do themselves any favors with the way that they come across. I've seen it. I've just written a blog post. There's a lady in England who thinks that she filmed a puppet moving in her basement on its own, and she thinks it's haunted. And I don't think it's haunted. I don't think it moved on its own. But I did an interview with her, and I published the transcript of the interview. And, you know, it's just one of those things where you agree to disagree. Neither party is going to prove it either way. And yet, right there in the comments section, you've got people going, ghosts don't exist. This is just stupid. And and you think, well, no wonder people think the skeptics are just a bunch of nasty, closed-minded idiots. When you talk to people like that, what does that achieve other than making you feel a bit cleverer than other people?
Yeah.
I started to say, I think that that type of behavior comes from somebody that wants or needs some type of self-reassurance that they're more clever, or more smarter, better prepared than someone else. I read that, and I thought your response was great to it, too.
I just think you just have to accept that people are going to believe very strange things. It's part of being... I think humans have believed in strange things from the beginning of time, and they will continue to believe in strange things right up until the human race no longer exists. It's just human nature. And kind of questioning yourself and being skeptical of yourself, it kind of goes against human nature, because we are actually pattern seeking creatures, and we're actually trying to stop ourselves from seeing those patterns and making connections where there are none.
And, you know, I also, like, I think strange is relative, too. You know, what we think is normal now, 150 years from now, people will think, how could they have ever thought that? You know, the same way we look back at history and think, well, they really thought some strange things. You know, I think when we look at where we are now, you know, as a whole, you know, we believe things are because we're living in the time. This is what we believe. This is what we're taught. This is what we see. This is what we see our parents say. This is what we see teachers, our people in our community say. You know, 150 years from now, as things advance and different discoveries are made, different advancements are made, you know, I love to think often that we're going to be the weird ones when we're looked back on.
I don't know. I think that's true. In part, but also...
Wait a minute, I'm not weird, Tim.
Oh, yeah. They're going to use this blog as evidence. They're going to find it somewhere on the internet. They're going to say, listen, Matt and Tim.
You have to look at what people believed about the supernatural, you know, 100 years ago or even longer. And you've got people still doing the same things today. And I think in decades to come, people will still be using Ouija board and table sitting and glass divination. And, you know, I think generations from now, it will still be happening. And they'll be going, why are these paranormal researchers so stupid? Don't they realize they're barking at the wrong tree? And it will just be the same arguments over and over. I mean, you look, you know, you had Houdini, who was the great debunker of his time. We've had James Randi, and then somebody else will fill their shoes. There will always be a need for... somebody to counter these claims, and because I think these claims will continue to exist. I mean, you look at religion. I know religion is slightly different because it's a more cultural and social thing, but I think that there are definitely parallels to be made between religion and paranormal belief. And in some cases, belief in the supernatural is a religious belief in the spiritualist churches and so on. So I think it will always exist, because I think humans will always need a crutch to lean on when it comes to what happens after you die. I think it's probably one of the scariest things is death. It's like the last mystery, and you never know until you actually die, and then it's too late.
You can't write about it.
Yep.
Well, yeah.
I think it's also, just like you said, it's also human nature to explain what you can explain with the best information that you have available.
People are always going to be skeptical of science, and there will always be conspiracy theories, and some people will always feel like that, unfortunately.
Chemtrails, you know.
Yeah.
Those are like my favorite. But, you know, we won't get into that.
Yeah.
Still another one.
That's a whole other episode.
Chemtrails. I just love that. What if you have time, give an example, and I've read some of your cases, but give an example of something that you've come across and you've helped someone who has seen something or has made a claim, and you looked at it and found a rational explanation for it.
I think my favorite case is there was the ghost of Clevedon Pier, and there was a student taking photos. The pier was all locked up, and he was taking photos of it from the shore looking out to the sea. It's quite a striking sight. And on one of the photos, when he looked back, he realized there was a figure, but the pier was shut down for the, you know, it was really early in the morning. And so he's like, who on earth is that? There's nobody out there. And the people who ran the pier were kind of promoting the idea that it was haunted and that it must be a ghost. And then ghost hunters started going on out there, and there was talk about there being ghost walks out on the pier and everything. And I tried to get the chance to interview the people who owned it, and they were just refusing to kind of play ball. So I just went out there and went onto the pier. And I looked around online and I found there was a fishing club that used it. And by speaking to the members of the fishing club and by actually going there, I was able to work out with their help that it was just a member of their club who he was behind a building on the pier. And he came around the side to check on his car, which was parked on the shore. And then he went back to his fishing pole. And in the time that the student had taken the photos, in one frame, there's nobody there. In the next frame, you've got the guy checking on his car. And then in the next frame, he's gone. And so the poor chap taking the photos is convinced he's caught some kind of ghostly figure. But actually, it's just a fisherman, which is quite amusing, really. And I actually got to meet the fishermen, and they had the jacket, and they were showing me the jacket. And in the ghost photo, you can see that it's just the, you know, the same design and the same colours and everything. So that was really fascinating. But I think a lot of the cases that I deal with, you tend to make small victories with them. So, for example, I mentioned the Windermere Lake Monster. And now, I mean, there are dozens of sightings of this supposed monster, and it would be really difficult to kind of explain away every single sighting because of the nature of eyewitness testimony. It's really difficult to investigate eyewitness testimony. But something that I was quite proud of being able to do, there was this rumour locally that the local aquarium had released two catfish into the lake without anybody knowing. And people were saying, oh, perhaps these catfish are, you know, they've been released into the lake without anyone knowing, and they've grown to huge sizes, and people are seeing these catfish. And it was, you know, it's a good possible explanation, but there was no evidence that this had happened. It was just hearsay. And I managed to track down these two catfish that had gone missing from this aquarium. They'd gotten too big for their tanks. And I managed to track them down to a local golf course. And the aquarium had donated them to the golf course in one of their big ponds. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to kind of debunk that part of that story. And I think when it comes to paranormal research, you have your big victories where you can completely solve a whole case and, you know, answer the whole case and it's done, a bit like Scooby-Doo. And then you have more smaller victories where you manage to pick apart bigger stories, and with those small parts of the story, you can kind of explain them away, and then slowly but surely the whole kind of thing starts to unravel. So you can't explain away the whole mystery, but you start to kind of make it a smaller mystery, if that makes sense.
I like that. And how did the people from the pier, like, did that information get back to the community around that? Yeah, how did they take it?
Not well. And at one point, I was actually in the gift shop trying to eavesdrop on the staff that were working there. And somebody had told them that I was there. I just kind of dropped by unannounced because it's open to the public. Mm-hmm. And somebody came into the shop and up to the manager. They were like, well, you know, she's out there asking questions. And people started rushing around trying to see where I was. And I was just there kind of in the corner of the shop, just with my face in the magazine going, oh, God, this is really, really bad. So I don't think they were probably very pleased that I'd managed to work it out. But the guys who used the pier for their fishing, they just found it really amusing. Just this whole kind of ghost thing. They were like, oh, yeah, that's just this guy called Victor. Oh, yeah, it's nothing. It's just a big joke to them, really. But I think the manager had seen a way of maybe getting free publicity from the haunting and didn't really like anybody sticking their nose in.
Yeah. Do you find, Haley, that you get more information out of interviews than actually investigating? Like, where do you find where you get the most information out of your work? What you know, out of your best work ethics? Like, where do you get?
Yeah. It always depends on the case. It's a really good question, actually. It depends on the case. And I don't know, I think with time, you start, you know, the longer you do this kind of thing, you start to see patterns that will emerge and you'll know that something's not quite right with the case. And so doing a bit of digging online will start to reveal stuff about people involved and helps you build up a bigger picture that they're kind of having people on for publicity or something like that. So I find sometimes just digging around online can be really, really useful. But at the same time, just by talking to people, this is something that I learned from Joe Nickel, actually. It's great. Google can be great. It can be absolutely great if you know how to use it really well. But there's nothing quite like talking to somebody. A lot of the stuff that I encounter tends to be stories that are reported in the press. People tend to go to the newspapers now before they go to a paranormal researcher. And so you have this kind of middleman telling the story. And it's really easy to kind of assume the worst about somebody and, oh, they're just faking that, oh, they're just having everybody on. But if you just step back and you talk to them and you're honest with them, you know, I'm skeptical. I'm not saying you've faked this, but lots of people are saying that. What are your thoughts? By giving somebody the benefit of the doubt and being honest with them, they can, you know, they'll be really honest with you back, and you can find a lot more information out about them and why they think what they think and why they went to the press. And actually, I found that probably half the time it's the press who have gone to the eyewitness rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
So people often assume, oh, this person is just after attention, but actually it's the other way around. They were dragged into the limelight rather than seeking the limelight. And sometimes it's like with the moving puppet. I mean, nobody can prove either way if that's real or if it's fake. And so what's the point in speculating wildly and insulting this woman? Why not speak to her and find out why she thinks what she thinks? And actually, I found that really fascinating, the things that she had to say. I don't agree with her. But I found I got more from just speaking to her than I did about looking at ways in which you can make a puppet move on its own. I don't think that kind of speculation is going to change anybody's mind. But actually getting to know why somebody thinks a puppet is haunted, I think it's quite interesting. It's very revealing.
Yeah, definitely. Me and Tim talk about this a lot on our show, and I've said it many times on our show before, but... Like, the reason I also ask that question, you know, from a skeptic like yourself, is because, you know, when I see a lot of investigators publicize a lot of their video clips of, you know, an EVP or, you know, whatever their claim is that they have as evidence, what really kind of gets on my nerves a little bit is I see a bunch of people sitting in a circle, you know, on a bench or on chairs or sitting on the floor, And they hear something, or, you know, they claim that this is an EVP, or, you know, whatever the evidence that they're sharing on the video. And I don't see anybody getting up and actually investigating or interviewing. Like I don't see the interview process. I don't see anybody talking about how they got about, you know, collecting this piece of evidence. Like, all I see is a video clip of them sitting on the floor and asking boring questions and, you know, like, give me some more information. Like, there's not enough information.
But I think even, you know, things like EVP, they've got no place in paranormal research. They're for ghost hunters who their sole intention is to find ghosts. And that's why they don't get up and explore or investigate, is because they've already got what they want.
Yeah.
I think anybody who investigates the paranormal and wants to do it from a rational point of view, that the approach is to not look for ghosts. The approach is to look for the rational causes. Why are people having these strange experiences? But even then, you can make mistakes. You know, you can use EMF meters because you think that EMF can cause people to have strange experiences when it's a lot more complex than that. But sitting in the dark and asking for signs, if you sit in a dark room and you ask for a sign, anything that happens will be a sign. And if you just if you just sat in the dark room and didn't ask for a sign, a floorboard would creak, there might be a noise, and you would just ignore it because it's not significant. And one of the things that when people tell me they think their house is haunted, one of the things I'll suggest they do is to just sit in their house in the dark and just listen to the house. And it's amazing the weird noises that your houses make. Just because, you know, they're cooling down or somebody's moving somewhere or the heating's just come on. And it's fascinating. But it's also really easy to turn those noises into something significant when they're not.
Yeah. I just love watching the videos. Like, if you could just, like, you know, Google anything or go on YouTube and, you know, you see them sitting in a dark room and you hear, like, you know, one investigator say to another, and they're like, "Did you hear that?"
Yeah.
And you're like, "No, where did it come from? What are you hearing? Like, explain."
I think it's easy to get caught up in the moment, though, and this is why it's so difficult for some people to turn their back on that approach, because they've had all of these experiences that they think are so significant. And when you've been doing that for a number of years, you have to, it's a lot to let go of, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, when I brought up the whole Santa Claus thing, you know, when you've been raised or you know, how do I say, even for myself, like I said, you know, I was brought up into investigating, you know, with a different style of work ethics. And when you're brought up that way for a long time, that's the way you're going to be biased too. And it's going to be hard for that person to change their views when they've been doing that for so long. And, you know, it's going to be hard for them to swallow, like, change in general, you know. Change in general for a lot of people are hard to swallow.
Yeah, exactly. And it has to be on your own terms, I think.
Yep.
I think you make that change for yourself rather than because somebody else is saying you should.
Yeah, no, totally. Well, speaking of your blogs, what have been one of your most favorite blogs? And, you know, if you could share maybe like one of your favorite blogs that you have recently wrote about, or any one in particular?
But I think my favorite, the stuff that I've enjoyed the most while writing it, earlier this year, actually in the new year, 2015, there were some really weird things going on in England. There was a spate of sightings of Slender Man and black-eyed kids. Yeah. And they're all coming out of this one place called Cannock Chase. And it was just absolutely ridiculously bizarre. And I've always found it really interesting why people believe what they believe and why people interpret things how they interpret them. And so I had some real fun kind of investigating that. And actually, in the process, I learned loads about kind of the history of folklore and how folklore has changed as you know, society has become more modern. And we've got, you know, technology advancing at a huge, rapid rate. How probably what people would once have called shadow ghosts or malevolent spirits, they're now calling Slenderman. And obviously Slenderman is fictional, but somehow has crossed over into the realm of being real. And people are mistaking, I don't know, they're kind of mistaking Slenderman for the boogeyman, or the bogeyman. And kind of, it's just, it's incredible what our ancestors here in England would once probably have called fairies, they're now, people are now calling black-eyed kids or, you know, malevolent spirits. And I just find it really fascinating. And just to have that happening in such a small period of time in one place in England was really, really fun to investigate. And
yeah.
I wrote a piece about the evolution of monsters as a result of that, and that was really, really fun.
How about the, I believe in your area also, there's been a numerous sightings of a giant black cat.
Oh, gosh, yes. I've actually had, they're called ABCs, which is alien big cats, and that means, it doesn't mean they're from outer space, it means that they're out of place, they shouldn't be where they're seen.
Right.
And growing up, I grew up in a village, it's like a farming village called Hilkerton. And when I was a kid, there was a big cat scare. People claimed they saw a panther, and there were various sightings. And actually, my friends and I, there were just fields everywhere, and we would play in the fields, and we had like a tree that we always went and climbed. And we were in this tree one day, and we all swear to this day that we heard like a big cat growling from behind us, and we all just ran home, absolutely convinced that we had heard this big cat. Well, it was probably a dog or something. But it's always fascinated me that people see big cats. And now I live in a town called Bracton-on-Avon, and a few years ago there were a spate of sightings of big cats in Bracton-on-Avon, and I swear they're following me. but people in... There have been a lot of sightings of these big cats in Wiltshire. And I've actually been... I went tracking a cat once, with some people who do that, kind of like how we do the ghost stuff, they do the big cat stuff, a bit like Bigfoot hunters, but for big cats. And, yeah, people who don't believe in the paranormal will swear to you that they've seen these big cats. And I've got a cousin, she used to be a nurse. She would go to people's houses to care for them on her rounds. And she'd be driving through the middle of nowhere, because Wiltshire could be quite rural. You can just be going down a country road and there'll be nobody for miles. And she swears that she came around the corner and she had to slam on her brakes because there in the middle of the road was this, like a puma. And a car came in the other direction, had to do the same, and it just crossed the road and went on into some woodland. And more recently, I was interviewing somebody who claimed that their house is haunted. They've got a big manor house here in Wiltshire. I can't name it, but we're talking about the ghosts and stuff. And then just out of the blue, he goes, oh, yeah, we've got a big cat that just wanders around all the fields. And sometimes you'll see this big cat when you're walking down the lane. And it's just absolutely bizarre. And it's one of those things where it doesn't make any sense, because there cannot be a population of panthers or pumas in Wiltshire. There's just no way that that can be a thing. But so many people are adamant they've seen it. And I think a number of the sightings are people misidentifying probably big dogs or other animals as being large black cats. But there are just so many rational people who claim to have seen these big cats. It's really interesting, because it's one of those things where you know that there are such a thing as big cats. They definitely exist.
Wow.
Do they actually exist in Wiltshire? I don't know. It's odd. It really is odd.
Cool. I just wanted to bring that up, because I know that's like a big thing over there. And
it is. Yeah. And it's not just where I live, though. It's all over England. There was, I think probably about a year ago, there was an incident where they thought there was a lion on the loose in Essex, and people had to stay on a train, and the police were out looking for it, and yeah, it seems to be a serious thing over here.
Yeah, definitely. Tim, you have anything else to add? We're kind of, Haley, going to wrap it up in a couple of minutes here with you. But
sure.
Tim, you want to add anything else to our guest?
No, I want to say thank you for agreeing to come on. I hope you had a good time talking with us. And I hope people that hear this at least get a different perspective from somebody else other than, you know, the normal mainstream paranormal stuff. And that's one of the reasons we like to do our show and do our blog or our audio, is to try to bring different people so that they can have they can hear different points of view. And with that, if you could, if anybody would have interest, if they hear this, how they can look at your blog, if you could give the website and any other way to contact you or anything else you might have on the media so that they could see, so they could go to.
Yeah, sure. If anybody has any questions that they want to ask, then they can do that via my website. Or I've got a Twitter account, which is at Hayley Stevens. That's H-A-Y-L-E-Y and Stevens with a V. To get on my website, I've got two URLs. One of them is ghostgeek.co.uk, and the other one is hayleyisaghost.co.uk. And again, that's H-A-Y-L-E-Y-isaghost.co.uk. Any questions, you can contact me, and I'm more than happy to answer them.
Yeah, great.
Awesome. The other one was Ghost Geek?
Ghost Geek, yeah. Ghostgeek.co.uk.
Okay.
It points to the same website. It's just I've got two URLs.
Oh, I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you again, Hayley, for,
like
I said, for you even, being so late. You know, in your neck of the woods over at the, over across the pond, I think they kind of say it.
Yeah, it's 2 a.m. over here.
Oh my gosh.
It's not that bad for a ghost hunter. We're used to this kind of thing.
Right.
And it's always good to chat.
Thank you
for having me.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. We hope to maybe have you on in the future. We'll keep in touch.
Sure.
I know Tim's a follower of your blog, and I think I will now.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Always good to hear. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So take care of yourself, and you've been a wonderful guest. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Bye bye. Bye bye. All right. So that was Miss Hayley Stevens. Tim, what did you think of our guest?
Oh, it's just incredibly awesome. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
It's there wasn't a whole lot of difference. I like where she's at. I like how she approaches things. I'm glad that she has information available for people that might be at that crossroads, like we talked about. You know, at that point where you start to kind of look back and go, "Wait a minute, I keep getting the same thing every time," and you know, if they want to look at something different, more critical, more open-minded, a better skeptic look at it, I'm glad that there's pages like hers out there that they can go to just to look at and read and see what they think.
Yeah. Well, at the end of our show, we always go over our list of guests that we have coming up for upcoming shows. Tim, I'm extremely excited for our next guest. I actually didn't tell you about this guest, but we have a cryptozoologist that we're going to have on August 21st.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a returnee that we had in the way beginning early stages when we first had our show debut. Do you remember Ken Gerhard?
Yes.
So we're going to have the pleasure, and we're very excited to have Mr. Ken Gerhard. He's a very well-known cryptozoologist. He's on the new show called Missing in Alaska on the Discovery Channel. And if I have the network wrong, I apologize. But he closely studies Loch Ness Monster, the Yeti, Bigfoot. He studied El Chupacabra, the Jersey Devil, many sea serpents all over the world. Including Ogopogo, the famous Lake Champlain monster, Mothman, those are all his area of expertise. He's been on the History Channel. He's been on Monster Quest. I don't know about you, Tim, but I was a huge fan of that show, Monster Quest, on History Channel.
Mm-hmm.
What I liked about that show is the extent of interviewing that they did, and that they actually did their own investigations. With whatever they were hunting, whether it be Bigfoot or whatever, cryptid that they were after at the time. He actually worked with William Shatner, which I'm jealous.
That's kind of cool. Just to have a picture with him would be cool.
Yeah. So he's been on True TV. He's been on many channels, National Geographic Channel. He's been on A&E, so he's, like I said, he's pretty popular. good friend of mine. We've kept in touch, you know, since having him as a guest before, and really excited to have him talk about the new show, Missing in Alaska. So, with that said, like I mentioned earlier in the show, Tim, we're kind of sponsoring and promoting the C2D1 30th Haunting Anniversary. You know, we're supporting the event that Chris D. Cesari and Saida Productions is kind of hosting up in Geneseo, New York, at SUNY College, where Chris D. Cesari went to college and he had an experience there. I'm going to be lecturing and speaking there, and Paranormal Talk Radio is kind of helping the event out. I'm really excited about it. It's October 17th. The best thing about this event, Tim, it's a free event, and that's very rare.
Free? I can afford free.
If it's free, it's for me. That's why I'm doing this event, because it's for a great cause. There's a lot of great people also lecturing there. John Tobin, Chip Reichenthal, Dave DeLeese, Jeff Unger. If I mispronounce his name, I apologize. It's just a whole list of people are going to be there. It's going to be a great event. I really recommend everybody go. Again, my lecture is going to be called Dangers of the Paranormal, both from the spiritual end of things and physical end of things. So on August 28th, the reason I'm getting at this, we're actually going to have the pleasure and honor of having our guests on August 28th. John Tobin and Chip Reichenthal are going to be our guests on our show on August 28th, Tim.
I like Chip, and oh, Lord, I had a...
John Tobin.
John Tobin, thank you, yes. Yeah. Great. I love being able to chat with them.
Yeah. You know, for those who don't know, you know, I met John Tobin up at Lake George. I had actually won tickets through their show. They had a show on the A1B network called Keeping the Spirits Alive. And we were there for a little while with our show. That's where our early stages of our show kind of went. But for those who aren't familiar with them, they're kind of my mentors in a way. They inspired me to start Paranormal Talk Radio. So these are two people who are important in my life. You know, the whole reason that, you know, I wanted to do this, and I met Tim on ParanormalWarehouse.com, and I just, you know, said to him, you know, we've been on the same page in many conversations. I said, you know, let's do a show together. And, you know, so they're kind of the whole reason that I started doing this again. And Tim, you're the other reason.
Well, it's a lot of fun. I've had a lot of fun doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, can't wait for that. And let me see who else we have coming up. Well, that's it for a while, actually, until September. But I'll announce our September guests when the time comes. But I know it was a good show, Tim.
It was a great show. I really enjoyed having her on as a guest. It was really good.
Tim,
she's really smart. Uh-huh.
What was the name of her blog again, so everybody knows?
Haley?
Yeah.
I don't know. I want to make sure I get this right. Haley is a Ghost. The Haunted Blog of Haley Stevens.
Cool. Yeah. Well, we had a flawless show, so that's always good.
Yeah. No. Echoes or 5-second delay echoes. That was a difficult show.
Oh yeah. I want to wish everybody a great weekend. Have a good night. And for those in England, I don't know what time it is over there, but go to bed.
2:00.
You know, I want to thank Haley again in public for being our guest. She was great, and wish her a lot of luck in her future endeavors. I don't know. Tim, I'll talk to you after the show.
Yep. Everybody have a great weekend. Safe weekend.
Yep. Take care, everybody. Have a good night.
Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. We broadcast live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Don't be intimidated by the hosts. We would love to get your feedback about our show, whether it is good or bad. You can leave comments on our Blog Talk webpage or email us privately at paranormaltalkradio@gmail.com. Would you like to interact with other listeners or the host during the show? Register free with Blog Talk Radio to chat with us live during the show. You can also look us up on Facebook, answer questions and polls, and get the latest news. Until next time, see you on the other side.